Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're going to continue to talk about what happened on Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim, and then go to Yahweh's presentation of Pesach.
Can, so, can I point something out here in Psalm 22?
Absolutely.
You know, you had pointed, you mentioned earlier, you know, my God. Actually, that's El, as in singular, for my one. My El, why have you forsaken me? In the Mizmor or Psalm 22:1. But then 22:1-2, immediately he goes far from away from Yahshua, my salvation. Are the words my groaning, oh my Elohim. So he goes right back to plural because the set apart spirit was no longer on this human manifestation and went back. So now it's plural again. Yeah. You know, and it's worth pointing out there.
It's profound, matter of fact, because almost always Yahweh uses the plural of Almighty to describe his title. And the reason that he does is that Yahweh represents himself not only as the Father, but also as our spiritual mother. That's the feminine manifestation of Yahweh's nature. And it was the spirit that left the physical body and the soul of Yahusha. Also in the corporeal manifestation, or the most set-apart manifestation of his nature, representing father, mother, and son, therefore family, is all being manifest. And so Yahweh uses the plural of Almighty to convey this his nature.
And I want to also point out Yahochanan. And Yahochanan and Matanyahu were really the most accurate. He says, my father who was given them to me is greater than all, and I and the father are one. Then he refines that in Yahochanan 14:28. He says, the father is greater in dimensions, mass, and power and stature than I. And, and that would be megas, and is how it was written in the Greek. And so, you know, I mean, he is part of Yahweh, but he's a smaller part of Yahweh.
Yeah, and, in fact, he spoke in Hebrew.
And of course, but otherwise, both the Savior and Creator are a liar.
And in Hebrew, it's Ab for Father, Rab for greater, and exist or is would be Haya, which is the basis of Yahweh's name. He was not the least bit misleading in conveying the fact that he is a diminished manifestation of Yahweh. That's what his name even means. And so it's what the title Masiyah means. And throughout the Torah and prophets, Yahusha is presented that way as a diminished manifestation of Yahweh engaged in the process of saving his children. So when the Pauline aspect of the fullness of the Godhead, whatever the hello Godhead is, was on him bodily, is embraced, it's in complete conflict with Yahusha's testimony and Yahweh's testimony and with reality. But it paved the way to have a religion over a man that was recast in the image of Dionysus. And that's why Christianity is such a lie today.
Well, that's that way you could incorporate all the masses through their pagan belief systems, no matter what they were. You could add a little here and add a little there.
Correct.
I want to add one other thing about as we walk through this narrow gate at Pesach, we go right into Matzah.
Correct.
And clearly. In Yasha Yahu, here's what it says: when as a concession he shall render his soul as a guilt offering out of the toil of his soul, he will see the light and find satisfaction. And through knowing, in a relational sense, or yada, the one who vindicates my servant, many will be vindicated as he will bear their guilt punishment. So as he goes through a beating, as he is crucified, then the spirit, the set apart spirit, leaves him because the set apart spirit cannot be in Sheol. That's how it's defined as a lack of Yahweh. So his soul's down there, and in this horrible situation, and he's taking the punishment due to us
on the Shavat of Matzah.
Yes.
And then
and
he's going to
the
see, then he's going to see the light. The light is Yahweh. Then he's going to see the light. He saw the light of Yahweh was released from the place of darkness on Bukurim, which is firstborn children.
And then
prophet describes exactly what happens. Right.
And met the spirit. And those are the 3 days from the heart of the land, Cardia, not dead in the tomb 3 days.
Correct.
That he told the Pharisees they were going to witness. He came to fulfill the Torah, and Korah, or these called out assemblies, are the very heart of that Torah.
Right. Live it precisely, which is gets to be a really interesting concept that, again, Christians have been lied to. While in Babylon, which was the most corrupt place on earth, the birthplace of religion and politics, of military and economic schemes, and the very place that Yahweh asked Abraham to leave before engaging in the covenant. Yahweh revealed a vision that unlocks the mystery of time, that ultimately pinpoints the very date that the Messiah, Yahusha, would arrive in Jerusalem. He said it would occur, if you just simply do the math from the time that he said that you begin the counting, of, on our pagan calendars, March 28th, 33 CE, a Monday. And in 33 CE, Monday, March 28th, 33 CE, which was 4 days before Passover, to honor his Torah promises. So he arrived 4 days before Passover.
The lamb is brought into the home.
Right. And in Shemot, it speaks of why the lamb is brought into the home 4 days before Passover. So would Christians have you believe that God was precise right down to the details of predicting his arrival 500 years in advance, and it being absolutely consistent with his depiction of Passover? And then when he tells us in that same testimony that that the remainder of the lamb is to be incinerated in the fire, that all of a sudden he said, let's just pass over that one because, you know, we're getting too many details here and I'm going to have a senior moment and I really don't care about the details anymore. So much for that. Let's just forget that. Or do you think maybe that God was consistent, since he's always consistent, and that the body of the Passover lamb was incinerated that same evening? And oh, by the way, a friend who listened to this program pointed out, there are three examples of Yahweh engaging personally to incinerate the sacrifice himself, sending down radiant energy to incinerate the sacrifice. Once is mentioned in Kara, which has been corrupted to Leviticus 9:24. The next is in Malach Kings 18:21 through 24. And the other is chronicled in the writings of 2 Chronicles 7:1. Three occasions. He's actually told you that he has intervened in this way to incinerate what was left of the sacrifice. And yet, religious people, for some reason, think, well, God had a senior moment and he decided not to do that, or are they just completely ignorant of all the testimony he's provided telling us this is what he was going to do? Now, beyond that, his soul had a job to do. Larry's just read what was explained, and we'll cover that tomorrow as we discuss matzah. His soul had a job to do, and the job that his soul had to do was to pay the penalty for our rebellion, which is to go to Sheol. That's what happened on the Shabbat of Matzah in year 4000 Yah, 33 CE. His soul went into Sheol to pay the ransom for us to appear perfect in Yahweh's eyes. And then, on the before the sun rose on the first day of the week, Yahusha's soul was released from Sheol and reunited with the light, with the spirit, and became the living embodiment of firstborn children, of Bukurim. And, of course, there is absolute affirmation of this, even in the eyewitness accounts contained in the Christian New Testament.
You know, I think what bothers me more than that is the fact that he's telling these Pharisees he's not going to give them any more of a sign than Yonah gave them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as Yonah was 3 days in the belly of this great fish, he'd be in the heart of the land. Of course, that's corrupted today.
3 days and three nights.
Dead in the tomb for 3 days.
No, yeah, which causes then Christians who think about this to say, well, then the eyewitness accounts are all baloney, and Passover was actually on a Wednesday in 33 CE, which isn't true. You can look
the point
at the,
is,
you can look at the moon phase
the
and everything
days,
else.
Why would the 3 days be important if they weren't fulfilling the Torah, which is exactly why he said he came. I came to fulfill Torah.
Yeah, the interesting thing, of course, is that what he was telling the rabbis is that I'm only going to give one sign. I'm not going to give you any more than this, because he recognized the same thing, Larry, that you and I have come to recognize. You cannot succeed with evidence and reason or by quoting Yahweh's testimony with a religious individual. If a person's an advocate, as the rabbis were, of religion, even God's testimony is irrelevant to them. And so he just says, you know, I'm going to give you one sign. This is one sign that with your own eyes you can witness, because obviously you're uninterested in the Torah, which explains all of this. And what he says is that he would remain in the heart of the land, which is Jerusalem. The land is Yisrael. 3 full days and 3 full nights. He arrived in Jerusalem, because after he arrived on the 4 days before Passover, it specifically says that he left. And he left Jerusalem because the rabbis were trying to kill him prematurely. He's fine to be the Passover lamb, but it's going to occur on Passover. It's not going to occur before Passover. So he left. He came back in to celebrate the Passover meal. It's why Passover begins at sundown and lasts through the following day. He could both observe the Passover meal and also serve as the Passover lamb under that basis. But he arrived on Thursday afternoon. He then, on the first day of the week, doesn't leave until the afternoon. Welcome back to Shattering This. We're considering the testimony that Yosha gave the rabbis, knowing that they would have no affinity for the Torah. Even God cannot save a religious individual and doesn't even attempt to do so. What you have is that he came into the heart of the land, Jerusalem, on Thursday night to celebrate Passover. Now, of course, if you read an early version of the King James, he was coming in to celebrate the Babylonian pagan holiday of Easter. They didn't change it back to Passover until they were laughed out of the scholarly community. Then he becomes the Passover lamb on Passover, after celebrating the Passover dinner at the right time at sundown on the 14th day. The continuation of the 14th day, which would be a Friday in 33 CE, he was the Passover lamb. Then on the Shabbat, he celebrated matzah by having his soul go into Sheol, the place of separation to unleaven our souls of religious and political corruption. And then on Bukurim, on the first day of the week, his soul was reunited with Yahweh's spirit. He saw the light as was predicted in Yashaya. And even then, the first to come upon where his body had previously been, his own mother didn't recognize him, mistook him for the gardener, hadn't a clue who he was. And he even tells her, don't touch me because I have not yet gone to the Father. The next we find of him, he is 60 stadia out of Jerusalem. That is on the first day of the week, Sunday in 33 CE. And it's in the late afternoon just prior to dinner. Specifically names the time. And there's two guys that had followed him for the last couple of years that had hung on his every word and deed. They didn't recognize him either. He had to explain who he was by referencing the Torah and prophets. And so,
and that's 3 days and three full nights. Exactly what he told him they had experienced.
Exactly. He's into the details. He does exactly what he says. And then, of course, he left after having dinner with them and literally walked through a wall into the upper room. The whole idea of him being able to move from one place to another in a fraction of a second affirms that he was now an energy-based entity. The fact that he walked through the wall and we're told that is he is now an energy-based entity. And they didn't recognize him either.
Can I ask you something?
Yeah.
When you think in terms of the heart of the land or, you know, in the oldest and the extant material we have in Greek, and it's written cardia.
Right.
Cardia, you ever hear of a cardio doctor? I mean, what do they deal with? They deal with
hearts.
Hearts.
All right.
And the heart of the land was Jerusalem.
Absolutely.
How in the world would anyone make that dead 3 days in a tomb? I do, you know.
Oh, to create a religion.
Talk about senseless.
But even in the religion, it's in wholesale conflict with the testimony in their religion. Because their religion's really clear as to when he arrived, and you can't get three full days and three full nights in the tomb. It's in complete conflict with the eyewitness accounts. So
right.
No matter what they do there, they've got a lot around. But to do that, they have to change the testimony that is prescribed. Very, very detailed testimony that shows him arriving to celebrate Passover on a Thursday, and that on Friday he became the Passover lamb, and on Shabbat the Shabbat was fulfilled, and that on the first day of the week before the sunrise, that's when he became the living embodiment of Bukhurim. The timing is explicit, and it's all detailed. And so it's wholly in conflict with the statement unless you recognize what he was talking about and translate it appropriately. So here we are. If you're a Christian and you're receptive at all to evidence and reason, you know for certain that your church, which is the name of a pagan sun goddess, has lied to you about the name of the individual that they claim was the basis of their religion. There was no Jesus. His name is Yahusha. They lied to you about his title. There was no Christ. He is the Messiah. They lied to you about the timing of his arrival into Jerusalem. It was not Palm Sunday. They lied to you about God dying. They lied to you about him being physically, bodily resurrected in the same body. How many of these lies would you tolerate, dear Christian, before you realize that those who are promoting these lies aren't trustworthy? When along the way do you say, I'm not going to trust people who lie to me? Perhaps there is someone who's trustworthy. Maybe I should observe what Yahweh has to say instead of religious men. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Before we bring Kirk on into the program here this morning during our celebration of Pesach, one thing I wanted to reemphasize is that Pesach has a specific purpose. It is the doorway to life for Yahweh's covenant children. That is what it represents. If you would like to survive your mortality, this is the one and only doorway to life. It is only for Yahweh's children, for those who have engaged in the covenant, which is why if you're a man, circumcision is required to participate in this celebration of life. But it is the very doorway to life that Yahusha spoke of in the Sermon on the Mount, when he says the way, the doorway is narrow that leads to life, and few there are that find it. Where the way that leads to death and destruction is broad, and most find it. So this is the doorway to life. It is unpopular. It will always be unpopular. But God provided a singular doorway to life. And Passover is it. So if you're not answering this invitation to celebrate your relationship in the covenant with Yahuwah, then upon the end of your earthly life, so long as you haven't led others away from God, that will be it. You haven't availed yourself of the doorway to life. Hello, Kirk. Happy Pesach.
Happy Pesach to you. It's wonderful to be passed over.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. There are certain things that are good to be passed over.
Oh, yeah.
And as it relates to death, it is good to be passed over.
Yes. And it only gets better the next 2 days. So.
Yes, it does, because the next day is we're made perfect. So it's one thing to be passed over for death. You become immortal. That's really good. It's much better to matzah, to have the fungus of religious and political sin removed and to become perfect in God's eyes. And while that's really good, it's the third day that's the greatest celebration of all. We're adopted. We're made God's children. We become the sons and daughters of Yahuwah. And that's as good as it gets.
That's so. I had a question other day. I was reading in Daniel, and I was covering material that I had covered years before. I'd read yada yada about predicting the year 33 CE, mm-hmm, when Yahusha would show up, and they used the same thing with 360 days overlapping the various calendars, the Gregorian,
right,
and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, when we calculate from 33 CE to the 2033 on that Yobel, we're using, mm-hmm, 365 1/4 days. Is that right?
No, I'm using the prophetic days, because Yahweh speaks of prophetic days. So I'm using 360 day years, because that's the code that Yahweh gave us as it relates to a prophetic year. And so the key is to understand when the declaration went out to restore Israel in the 20th year of the king's reign. And so it does require some investigation to know of the political upheaval that existed in Babylonia during that particular time. But if you do your homework, you can establish in the year 444 BCE. And if you use the 360 day, which is based upon the lunar cycles, 360 days of the in a prophetic year, you come to 4 days before Passover in the year 4000 Yah, which is 33 CE in our pagan calendars. And there's even the verification that is when Passover occurred at that particular time. It is, to be precise, it is on March 28th, Monday, in 33 CE, 4 days before Passover. And, of course, Passover occurred beginning on Thursday night that year and all through Friday. Although there is no Good Friday, because it happens on a different day of the week. The day of the week is irrelevant, with one exception. When Yahweh does something profound like the fulfillment of Pesach, Matzah, and Bukodim, Kirk, he is precise in having a natural Shabbat coincide with the most important message he's conveying. So since matzah, unyeasted bread, is the seminal date of these three events, and it is when God does the work for us to be perfected so that we can enter his presence, that occurred on a natural Shabbat. It's just passage tells us that it is a celebration, a Shabbaton. It fell on a national Shabbat in 33 CE, year 4000 Yah. And that's similar to Sukkah, the day that we camp out with God, shelters. In 2033, exactly 40 Yobel, or 2,000 years after the 33 CE fulfillment of the first four Mikrei, the last two, are fulfilled, so that the 1,000-year celebration of the Shabbat in Sukkah falls in year 6,000 Yah on a natural Shabbat. It's a Saturday in 2033.
I didn't know that. That's perfect.
Yeah. It's the timing works out perfectly. I'm sure it was just a coincidence.
Yeah.
Well, as we consider Pesach, it's, I want to put it all in just in a little bit of historical context. During the time that Yahweh led the Israelites out of the most religious, political, and militaristic nation on earth, which was Egypt. They called themselves the Black Land at the time. He reinforced the first four steps along his seven-step plan to facilitate his covenant promises. And during the Exodus, there's four of the seven Mikre that are immortalized, that are made so that they have a historical setting. And you might say, wait a minute, there are seven steps to God. Why did he just memorialize the first four? And the answer is that the Israelites represent the covenant. They are the ones that Yahweh established his covenant with. And the benefits of the covenant, the five benefits, are all provided by the first four of these Moed Mikre. And so what you see is God fulfilling the first four during the Exodus, just as he fulfilled the first four in 33 CE. So it is designed, these dates are designed on behalf of the covenant's children. Now, he will fulfill the last three in due time. We will find, and I think it's highly likely that I can't swear to it, but I think it's highly likely that Teruah, which is the fifth of the Moed Mikre, is going to be fulfilled. The promise of it will be fulfilled immediately after Yisrael is dissected. It's forced to give up the high ground of the West Bank and becomes unsustainable. And immediately before the all-Islamic war is launched against Israel. That's God's timing. I think all of that's going to occur 7 days before, 7 years before his return. So I suspect in 2026. As it relates to the last two, they will absolutely and unequivocally, Yahusha is going to return, is Yahweh undialed down in terms of his energy on Yom Kippurim in year 6000 Yah, which is on our pagan calendar is sundown on October 2nd in 2033. And then 5 days later, after he has restored the earth, removed all traces of religion and politics and militarism from the earth, returned it to the conditions experienced in the Garden of Eden. On a Shabbat, the celebration of Sukkah, 5 days later, he is going to usher in the millennial Shabbat, a thousand-year celebration of the life as it existed in the Garden of Eden. That is his timing. You had a comment, Kirk?
No, I was just going to say it's a shame we can't get him to do it a little bit quicker.
Oh, man. Yeah, you know,
I know the reasoning, but wow.
Yeah, the reason is that, you know, since we are in the period now of celebrating and of enabling and of performing in accordance with Teruah, Yahweh wants his message told so that people who are receptive, who are open-minded, who know that religion is a pack of lies, might not only be informed in that regard and walk away from religion and politics, but also might come to walk to him along the path that he has provided. So long as we are here between now and Teruah in 2026, we have the opportunity to broadcast his testimony. And so that is in the interest of humanity.
Of course.
And so we will continue to be here for that period of time. But as a loving father, he is not going to let us endure the tribulation, and particularly the last 3 years of the tribulation, which are where he turns over the control of earth to HaSatan. And he's just not going to let his children endure that, which is why we are removed prior to that occurring.
I've got another question for you here. Why do you suppose it is in Rabbinic Judaism that they just disregard Bikurim? I mean, it's just blatantly disregarded.
Yes, as also is Shavuah.
Why?
In fact, for the most part, so is Bikurim. They don't. They say nothing.
That's what I'm saying. Bikurim.
Well, it's Bukkudim, Shavua, and Teruah, all of which are disregarded in Rabbinic Judaism. All three.
Yes. Yeah,
so the middle three are disregarded. I think that they disregard the third of the 3 days. They understand the historical significance of Passover and Matzah, but they don't understand its spiritual and covenant significance. And so if you don't understand the significance of Yahweh's children are made immortal and perfect on the first 2 days, then you would never come to the conclusion that means that as covenant children, we can be adopted into God's family. And so they don't understand the spiritual consequence, so they have no concept of Bukkudim. And then on Shavuah, they don't celebrate it as a time of enrichment and empowerment, which Yahweh says occurs on this day. There are some in the rabbinical community that recognize that Shavuah was the time that Yahweh began the process of dictating the Torah to Moshe. But they have a problem with that because Judaism, Rabbinic Judaism, isn't based on the Torah. It's based on the Talmud. So then it has to be the argument, well, then it was the period that the Talmud was revealed, but there's no indication of that. And so it's just easier for them to forget it all. And they do. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. This is the first discussion that Yahweh has regarding Passover. It's found in Shemot Names, Exodus 12, 1 and 2. In addition, Yahweh spoke to Moshe. Moshe means one who draws out. And to Aaron. Aaron means source of enlightened free will. In the realm of the Crucible of Egypt. The Crucible of Egypt is a metaphor, Mitzrayim, for human religious and political oppression. For the purpose of saying, La Amar, this month shall be your first and foremost time of renewal. It shall be for you and on your behalf the first month of the year. Now, Yahweh had explained that this month was the time when barley was standing as a grain, and that the kernel in the barley was still growing and receptive. So you have standing grain, you have barley representing saved souls, you've got the kernel of the barley still receptive, not hardened, and therefore unreceptive. And he says, this is a time of renewal. This shall be on your behalf, the first month of the year. Month is based upon the Hebrew word kodesh, which is based upon the Hebrew verb kadash, which means to renew. And therefore, there should be no one who mistakes the timing of Passover, or because it's based upon 14 days from the time of renewal. Now, if a month began with a full moon, would the light of the moon be renewing or diminishing on the moon from that point on? No, obviously diminishing. The only time when the light on the surface of the moon that's reflected back to us is renewing begins when the first sliver of light appears and then continues for 14 and three quarters days. Continuing to increase, and it is still increasing when we celebrate Passover. But it means that Passover, Matzah, and Bukkudim are always celebrated under the light of a full moon, the maximum amount of light. So God has established the time. This is His timing, and He is God after all, and so He can establish the time for the meetings. You know, you go to work for a company, the boss says, we're going to meet on the third day of the work week at 9 a.m., you know, you don't have to be there, but you only have to be there if you want to continue to work for the company. In this case, God established a meeting time. And you don't have to show up, but don't expect to find yourself in God's company if you don't. He then says, speak to the entire witnessing community of the children of Yisrael. To say, before we do that, let's consider why he referred to them as a witnessing community and what is represented by children of Yisrael. Because if you are opposed to God's testimony and you want to limit it to Israel, then you really ought to know what you're excluding yourself from. Yahweh chose the children of Israel to be his witnesses. He speaks through individuals. Now, God could stand up there on the top of a mountain, or he could just be this blazing light in the sky, and he could speak boldly to everyone so that everyone knew exactly who he was and exactly what he's saying, and he could broadcast his message 24/7. That's not his style. If he were to do that, there'd be no purpose in free will, because God would be obvious. You couldn't ever corrupt or deny what he had to say. It'd just be constantly there. God chose to create the universe because he wanted to have a relationship with his covenant family, and therefore, in relationships, you engage and work with one another. And so God, to celebrate this covenant relationship of this, of doing things together with humankind, has chose to reveal himself through humankind. Now, he proves that it's him who is speaking by constantly telling the same story in exactly the same way, and being always correct historically, always correct prophetically. He proves that he's authoring it, but he works through people. So he says, speak to the entire witnessing community. All of Yahweh's witnesses are descendants of Abraham, Jacob, and Yishak, all of them. And it's their purpose to share his witness. Now, children of Israel, it means children who engage and endure with God. Ish, Sarah, El. If you're going to be a child who exists and endures with Yahweh, then you're part of his family. Now, if you want to be excluded from that, then you're not an individual who exists and endures with God. Your choice, but be really careful when you make it.